Grand Canyon University's RN to BSN online degree program makes earning your bachelor's in nursing possible. Balance online coursework with local in-person clinicals to position yourself for potential leadership opportunities in the time you have from wherever you are, leaving room for what matters. Achieve your goals with your personalized plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.
Hello, everybody. I am Lucia Matuonto, and welcome to the Relatable Voice podcast, a talk show where my guests and I talk about relatable everyday situations, books, and the environment we live in. Remember to subscribe and follow the podcast on social media so you can be notified when a new episode is available. Let's begin. Today we have a special guest joining us all the way from New Jersey. Adam Wilson is an award-winning comic writer and co-publisher of Read Furiously. Adam's upcoming graphic novel, Last of the Pops, is set to release in October. So, Adam, welcome to the
Thank
RV.
You. Thank
of
you.
Course.
It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you here, Adam. So, I heard you grew up in a small farm town in northern New Jersey.
I did, yes. And it's funny because New Jersey isn't really known for its farming. So it's kind of like one of those weird anomalies where, like, people say New Jersey, they think, oh, it's that place right next to New York City, or, oh, it's that place with the Jersey Shore. But, like, for me growing up, it was always, yeah, New Jersey is a place full of cows. Like, you know, on a school bus to, you know, growing up, I would pass three dairy farms in the 5-minute drive that I would have between my house and the school. So it's a very interesting place to be from New Jersey, because it's not that common of an area.
Mm-hmm. Can you share the most amusing encounter you've had with a cow or any farm animal?
Okay, yeah, so this is my go-to story, because there was a farmer who lived a few blocks down from us, and one night my dad gets a call. It was just after dinner, but it was summertime, so, you know, the sun hadn't really set yet, and he gets a call from a friend. He's like, Jerry, listen, Beamer's cows got out, feel like helping us round them. And, you know, these were close for family friends, so had they not we not been that close to them, my dad probably would have just laughed and hung up the phone. But because it was them, we're like, sure, we'll help them out. So we walked down the block, and sure enough, there in one of the fields are just a bunch of cows hanging out. And so, you know, we kind of come up with a plan, and everybody gets on, like, their respective sides, and we create a bit of like a wall around the cows, and we slowly start marching them back to the farmhouse. And we're walking past one of our neighbor's houses, and the neighbor just happens to breed beagles, which I don't know if you're familiar with beagles, but
yes,
they are very, very loud, and anything will set them off to start barking. So the minute that we get, like, within, I guess, smelling distance for the beagles, for them to realize there are other animals in the area, they just start going crazy. Like, they're nowhere in sight, but you can hear them, and the cows freak out, and they just go scattering in every direction. So, like, yes. So what should have been this, like, very easy, like, you know, 20-minute thing of, like, just slowly march the cows back into the stables, became this night-long thing of, like, we were out until probably, like, 7 or 8 that evening, just kind of, like, trying to slowly wrangle them in, and then kind of taking them the back way through all of these fields and hills to get them back into the farm, but also avoiding any roads that could potentially have, like, things that could startle them again. So, you know, it was, and I mean, I only had to be, like, maybe 8 or 9 at the time, so I was still really little, and, like, you know, a cow compared to an 8-year-old is a very big thing, but here I was thinking I could, you know, control them and wrangle them and kind of, like, get them through the wooded areas.
Yeah, and it's interesting that they are big, yeah, and they are afraid of everything.
Yes, yep.
They can't realize the power they could have if they knew.
Yeah, because but like because like it's one of those things you realize like as soon as they got started, it was just like this charging force that was like knocking over like mailboxes and like tree stumps and all that kind of stuff. So it's like we could have really done very little in that situation until except wait for the cows to calm down.
And you know, Adam, cows have been a part of my life since I was a child. I always
Oh,
loved
really?
cows. Not that I had a lot of contact with them, but when I saw a cow when I was a kid, I was so in love, and at the same time I was afraid because of course they were big compared to my size. But anyways, I always loved cows, and I even included them as characters in my children's books.
Oh,
Just,
that's awesome.
yeah. So, if you were to create a comic superhero based on farm life, what powers would they have?
Ooh, that's a tricky one. All right, so there has to be some level of invulnerability, I feel like, because cows are just built so thick and sturdy that, like, if you run into one with a car, the car will be way more damaged than the cow will even notice. So I think that definitely has to play a factor into it. I think because cows also they have five different stomachs for digestion, so I feel like being able to eat and digest certain things, I feel like that might be an interesting thing to play with as like a superhero, like being able to chew through metal or something like that. So I might go that route and like make something that's just really tough and really, really durable as a superhero.
Yes, I like it. Yeah, they can actually, they spend hours eating there, like
They
ruminating.
do.
Yeah. You mentioned, Adam, having various hobbies and interests outside of writing and editing. So what are some of your favorite hobbies?
So I really love like the arts in general, like anything. So I, growing up, I was always playing in bands. I was to varying degrees of efficiency playing different instruments all throughout my life. Even today, I still like playing around with my guitar or my bass or something. I'm trying to teach my son piano and that's going okay. But then, I'm also a big fan of movies. My wife and I, that kind of used to be our thing all the time, is we would go out and on a Friday night dinner, bookstore, movie, like every week. That would be what we would do. And then just, we live in an area where there's a really nice sculpture garden. There are a couple different museums. So whenever we can, we like to go out and do that kind of stuff. So it's really just kind of getting to take in and experience all of that kind of stuff. It's kind of the things that I really love.
And I see that it's all about creativity,
Yes.
arts, and movies. So, and the
Exactly,
whole
yes.
family, yeah, is in
Oh,
this.
yes. I mean, it's funny, like our son is very much into like the sciences. He loves animals. He loves learning all the facts about them. But at the same time, it's like even with him, it's becoming very narrative. Like he loves telling stories about animals. Like every day he'll like just like I'll come we'll be finished with work and he'll come running over and be like, look at the story I made. It'll just be a bunch of illustrations and he'll spend the next 10 minutes elaborating like on what he illustration is and how it plays into the story. So it is a whole family thing.
You've written four graphic novels so far. Is that
Yes,
correct?
that's correct.
So, Adam, could you explain the difference between comic books and graphic novels?
Absolutely. It's interesting because it's one of those things where the terms are a little gray because there's comic books, graphic novels, and then trade paperbacks, which is like throwing a whole other, piece of the equation. So a comic book is really, it's staple bound. They used to call them floppies because they were actually floppy. The same paper for the cover was used on the interior. So you could roll it up, you can put it in your pocket, and it's usually never more than like 40 pages or so, give or take. And it'll tell sometimes a self-contained story, sometimes one piece of a story arc. And then you have a graphic novel, which is a long form story. So that can be, paperback or hardcover. And usually those will go over about anywhere from like 60 pages on. And those are usually a lot more in-depth storytelling. They do a lot more. They'll tell usually like again, sometimes they'll even be serialized. You'll have graphic novels, for example, in Japan, manga graphic novels are serialized. So it's still, pieces of the story, but much longer formats. And then, like I said, the trade paperback aspect is when sometimes what they'll do is they'll have the the single issues, and they'll collect them into a graphic novel. But because it's, it was originally a comic, now it's a graphic novel, they usually refer to them as like a trade paperback because it's a little bit more serialized.
Ah, okay. So graphic novel has more pages and
Yeah.
it's like the full story, even serious. It's like the way.
Exactly. Yeah. Like the short answer, I guess I could have said is, a graphic novel is a long form comic book.
A long form. Okay. Now
Yeah.
I understand. And what inspired you to delve into comic book writing and editing? That's not only writing,
Yeah.
also editing, and especially with the independent publishing scene.
It kind of came about in college because I didn't want to think about getting a real job. I was having one of those kind of late night conversations with a friend of mine, and he was an art major. I was very unhappy in my pre-law degree. And we were kind of having those one of those moments where like we don't know what to do with our lives. And like I had just seen the movie American Splendor with Paul Giamatti, which is about the life of Harvey Pekar and the independent comics that he created. And I remember just being so curious about his work because growing up, I was always a fan of comics, and growing up, even I was always writing out. I was doing short stories, poetry, plays, all that kind of stuff, and I never really found like a writing format that worked. So I just kind of did random stuff. But after seeing that movie, and having this conversation with my friend, I was like, I wonder if we could do that. I really liked the stories that he was telling. And as a result, I was exposed to all these other awesome creators who were doing things that were so different from the comics that I grew up as a kid. Like I was reading, Star Wars, superheroes, all of that kind of stuff. And here was this guy and all these other creators who were telling, stories about their everyday life, like the struggles of having to fit in, going to the grocery store and getting stuck behind someone walking slow, or, someone dealing with cancer. So like real everyday things. And I was just like, I'd never seen comics done that way before, but I would love to try it. And so here I was having this conversation with my friend who was an artist about how we didn't know what we want to do with our lives. And maybe it was just us trying to kick the can down the road, but we're like, you know what? Maybe we could try writing comics. And so I wrote a couple of short stories and he took them and he illustrated them. We got it to the point where we had like one or two stories that were actually finished. And so we snuck into the school computer lab and printed them all out and stapled them on our dorm room floor. And then we just went around to like local comic shops and said, like, we have comics, would you put us on consignment? And a few places actually took them and we sold a few and we're like, suddenly became this thing of like, we kind of just did this as like a way to ignore the future that was slowly coming in on us as graduation was approaching. But then all of a sudden it was like, maybe this could be an actual thing. And so he went on to do other things. But I kept trying. I teamed up with some other artists. I started getting some short stories published in different anthologies. And then, as a result, I started teaming up with other groups of people who were doing work. So I started people kind of tapped me. It's like, oh, you did short stories before. Would you be able to edit an anthology if we wanted to do one? And I was like, I've never done it before, but I could figure it out. I've been through the process as a creator. I could kind of probably figure out how to do it on the other side. And so I started editing anthologies, kind of putting my own stories in there and then helping collect other people's work. And it really just kind of became this snowball effect of like, I kept wanting to do it. And I was very lucky enough to find other people who would let me do it. So, yeah, and so eventually what happened is like I just tried to take on bigger and bigger projects. And then eventually I was like, you know what? I have a story that I really want to tell. Like it's not a short story, it's not a single comic. Let me just start writing it and see how long it goes. Like what eventually comes of it. And maybe it'll be a comic book series that I write, maybe it'll just be a standalone thing. And so I wrote it and it eventually became the script that would eventually become my first graphic novel, Brian and Bobby. And yeah, so then I got that published through a company out in Philadelphia, and that kind of just really kicked it off from there. And so I just kind of settled in. I started working with them as an editor and just continued working on my own stuff as well.
And do you make the illustrations yourself, or you have an illustrator?
I do. I'm going to say like 99% of the stuff I've worked with an illustrator on, there have been a few things that I got really impatient on, and I just decided to try and illustrate myself. So I have these very crudely things, crudely drawn stories where I took pictures of me and my friends, and then I traced over them in Photoshop. So it's they're hidden away in some anthology somewhere, but I've never gone back to it because, like, it was fun, but it was definitely not the quality of work I was looking to do. So I definitely decided at that point it's better to work with people who are much more talented than myself when it comes to the illustrations.
And also, you have more time to create.
Exactly, yes. Yeah.
And your upcoming graphic novel, Last of the Pops,
Yeah, Last of the Pops.
it seems to explore themes of music and loneliness. I believe that the title plays on the phrase Top of the Pops.
It does. Yes. Yeah. Last of the Pops. Because I mean, there is that, you know, the old music show, but Top of the Pops, they used to play in the UK. And I remember I was thinking about the show one day, and for some reason, just the play of words of Last of the Pops came into my head, and I was like, that's really good. I like that. And so I was just like, someone had to have used that before. That there had to be something, whether it was, you know, someone recorded an album, someone wrote a book or something about it, especially since the show was off the air. I figured, you know, someone had to have gone and been like, let's do a retrospective on the show, Top of the Pops, and we'll call it Last of the Pops. And so I Googled the term and nothing came up. And so I was like, that this seems like too good of an opportunity to waste. So I didn't know what I was going to do with it, but I knew that I really loved this title and I wanted to find something. So I just kind of wrote it on a Word document and I let it sit in like my hard drive for probably about 6 months before I even had any ideas. And then it just became this like this place where I would jot down random thoughts about, here's some things I like about music. You know, here's why I've never had a favorite song before. And then over time, like this like weird like collection of just random things turned into like a bunch of like almost monologues that I was writing about people's connection to music and then people's connection to each other. And then from that, these like specific characters started taking shape. And I thought, wow, you know, I could do something with this. And then finally, like as I started to kind of see what I kind of decided, you know what, this would actually make a really interesting graphic novel if I could figure out the right way to approach it. And that's kind of how I came up with the book.
Yeah, that's interesting because you started with the title instead of the characters.
I really did, yeah. And I usually don't work like that. Like usually I have a clear idea of like I want to write a story about this type of person, or I want to write a story that explores, you know, these themes. And this time it was really, really backwards. Like I liked that title so much that I didn't know how I was going to use it, but I just knew I wanted to use it somehow.
It's interesting because, for example, for me, I need to have the characters. Sometimes I don't have the story, I just have the
Yeah.
characters. But having the title is also great because
Yeah.
when you look at that, I said, I have this. So now it's time to create the story.
And it's funny because I think too that if the characters didn't start to take shape, it would still just be this long document of random thoughts and ideas. So it was very dependent on the characters actually eventually kind of presenting themselves within all this randomness that was the writing. And I think it was kind of like that was probably the next thing that happened was like realizing who these people were that I was writing about.
And Adam, how have these themes, music and loneliness, influenced your storytelling? Because we all know that loneliness is a prevalent issue in today's society.
It really is. And like I did, that was kind of the theme that ended up being more prevalent in the book, even though I started writing it about music. But I think that like one of the interesting things is music is very much a connective thing. Like you play music, you play in a band, which means you're connected to this group of people. You play music to communicate with other people. And so it's very much this tool of communication, is this tool that connects people together, you know. Like think about the people that you bond with because you discover that you have the same favorite band or something like that, or you meet friends when you go out to see a concert or something like that. So really, like one of the biggest things I think though is that so music has changed so much from when I was little. Like when I was little, I was still of that age where I was like right on the cusp of like having a Fisher Price record player and listening to records. as a really little kid. And then I, watched over time as records became cassette tapes and cassette tapes became CDs. And now I just stream everything on my phone. So like it really has changed our relationship with music, and as a result, kind of changes the way that we interact with music as well. Like I'm no longer that kid in high school who's like making mixtapes for the girl that I like, but I send my wife songs all the time, and I'm like, oh, hey, you should listen to this song. I think you would like it. So the idea is still there, but it's changed in such a weird way, because it used to be, you would have to sit there and you'd have to try and record it in just the right way, and you had to make sure that you wind up the songs in such a way where you had 45 minutes on one side of a cassette. So you had to kind of make sure that you had 43 minutes worth of music. Otherwise, something was going to get cut off. But now it's literally like I just hit a share button. I can send a song to somebody who's like, hey, heard this and thought of you.
Yes, I remember these cassette times. I didn't remember about this 45 million.
That was a big point of anxiety for me when I was a teenager. I was like, I got to make sure I have just the right amount of music. And so you have to like think of the flow of the song, but also the length of the song. It added a whole other level of complexity.
Adam, as one of the co-publishers on Red Furiously, along with Samantha, whom I interviewed last month, could you tell us why you both decided to start this company?
I think one of the biggest things is that we were both kind of coming up in our writing careers through different paths. I was working with this independent publisher where I was one of their editors, and I was trying to kind of get my own work out there as well. But being the editor and trying to do that, trying to get my own projects up and going, it was very difficult to kind of balance that. And I didn't really have the support that I wanted from the publisher to say, okay, well, you want to do these projects, we can definitely make a space for you. And Samantha was at this point where she was working as a writing professor, and she was also freelancing as a journalist, publishing for different sites like Bustle and the Mary Sue, places like that. And we both kind of just like hit this point where we were like, we want to be doing something more. And th there isn't really a seat at the table for us, especially with the types of stories that we want to be telling. So why don't we just make our own table? And that's a very like tricky question, because when you say that, all of a sudden it's like, well, we're not going to self-publish stuff. We don't want to be people who, just go on Amazon and put their book on there and, just then kind of join that race of trying to push and push and push their own books. And because we knew that like we were in this situation where we wanted, to find an audience for our work. We wanted to find a way to get our work out there. And we knew there were so many other people out there as well that wanted to do the same. And so we're like, if we're really going to do this, if we're really going to explore this idea of trying to build something where we can tell the stories that we want to be telling, we should also be looking at other people as well who are in this similar situation. Like there are countless people out there who really have these amazing stories they want to tell, but they just don't have anyone who's going to listen. And so we really wanted to just kind of like open this space up to those people and really find those stories that were really, really interesting and really that we were just as excited about as the authors were, and give them that platform to help tell their stories too. And so it kind of became this one thing where we had this very selfish idea of wanting to just do more for our own careers, but then tried to like turn it out and say, no, let's actually make this something that is really like open to everybody, because that's what we wish we had coming up.
Yeah, that was a great idea. I was talking with Samantha and she told me, and I said, wow, how can people submit the books? You are going to start in October, is that correct?
So the kind of our flagship series that we've established over the years is our One and Done series, which is it's this series that's designed to be these short pocket-sized books that are easily read, and they're each just like their own standalone little story. So people don't have to worry about like lots of continuity backlog that they have to get through, but they're still getting this really, really great story that they can get through and feel like they accomplished something. And so that's kind of the one that we're really focusing on. That's what we're opening up submissions to, because that's the one that people have responded to the most. And it fits this need that we didn't realize that there was in the reading community. Like when we do a lot of shows, we do a lot of signings, we do a lot of events. And one of the things that people would always say to us is, oh, I love reading, I just don't have the time, you know? And so we're like, well, let's make something that gives them the time. Let's make something that's, you know, really enjoyable, but not something that they have to worry about getting through, you know, 600 pages of.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
That's why some people say I love reading short stories because I have
Yep.
no time to spend like months writing a book like 600 pages. And what role do you see independent publishers like Read Furiously playing in shape the future of literature and graphic novels?
I don't want this to sound pretentious when I say this, but the independent publishers have always kind of been slightly ahead of the curve when it comes to things, because there's so much that we can do in the way of experimentation when it comes to the books that we publish. And as a result, we tend to take a bit more chances. And that really kind of, I don't want to say defines the trends, because we're not, you know, egotistical enough to assume that, you know, we're the people who are defining what's going forward. But really, like, there have to be people willing to take those chances in order for a mainstream audience to actually recognize something as worthwhile. And the independent presses are really the ones who are out there saying, this is weird, but this is weird in a good way. And people would really, really like it if they gave it a chance. So we're going to be the ones to put it out there so that people can give it a chance. Like, I think with Last of the Pops, even, when I was writing it, I wanted to do something very, very different than I had ever done before. And so instead of approaching it as a regular graphic novel, I actually wrote it as an epistolary novel. So the story is told in two separate parts. It's told visually through the panels and the pages and how those scenes play out, but it's also told through journal entries, it's told through podcast manuscripts, it's told through email blasts, it's told through all of these different ways that, and then the two kind of overlap each other so that as you're watching a scene play out, you're also actually reading the transcript from an interview that someone has done. And, you know, it's a big leap in terms of storytelling. It's not something that, I mean, I tried to do research on this because I didn't want to say, oh, this is the first time it's been done, but I've done tried to do some research, and I have not found any examples of like a full-length graphic novel that's tried that before. And so it's the type of thing that like would be a very hard sell for a lot of publishers. But when I pitched it to Samantha, she was like, that's, if you can do it correctly, that would be a really cool idea. And so like we tried it out and we workshopped it, and you know, I'm really, really happy with the results. So it's that idea of like indie publishers, you know, they'll take the chances that other publishers won't necessarily do. And then that can kind of help set the tone for the things that larger groups are going to try going forward.
And when is this book going to be available for us?
So it's in pre-orders right now, and the official release date is October 15th.
Ebook as well.
Eventually ebook. It will ebooks usually come out about 6 months later. So this will be coming out in October, and then later on we'll be doing the ebook version as well.
And Adam, what exciting projects are coming up? You in the future, more books.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that Samantha and I just kicked off is we're gonna be doing the third volume in our New Jersey anthology. So it was something that Samantha was really, really excited about. She's born and raised in New Jersey as well. She grew up in Bayonne, which is just outside of New York, and then also down in Toms River, which is along the Jersey Shore. So between the two of us, three very, very different, you know, experiences living in New Jersey. And so she really wanted to try and capture just that diversity that exists within the state, because it's like, I think it's the fourth smallest state in the entire country, but it has like the 11th highest population. And so like, yeah, like if you were to look at like the 10 states that are above it, the next in line is Ohio, and you can fit three New Jerseys inside Ohio,
I
but
didn't
the population difference is only like maybe like 2 million, or I don't know the exact numbers, but it's something really ridiculous like that, where like the number of people that exist within New Jersey for the size that it is just ridiculous. And as a result, it's this state that's just so packed with stories, with different people with different perspectives. Like, again, I grew up in a farm town. Samantha grew up in a city that, where the New York skyline was outside her bedroom window. And then she moved and she lived on the beach. There are very few places where you can say that within a state that you could also drive from tip to tip in 2 hours.
What a difference between
Exactly. Yeah.
yeah. And this anthology will be published this year.
Next year, we're starting submissions for
Next year.
that this year, and then it's going to be coming out in 2025.
You're
Nope.
unstoppable.
Yeah.
And where can our listeners find you?
The Read Furiously website, readfuriously.com, is the best place to go for all the information about the publisher. It has, all of our titles. Then there's, Instagram is at Read Furiously. Facebook, I believe, is facebook.com/readfuriously. My personal website is called lifeinasplashpage.com. Then my Instagram handle is amwilson81. So those are kind of the two places that I spend what little time I have online.
Samantha is going to be featured in our magazine, The Relatable Voice.
Yes.
So, yes, so our listeners will be able to read a little bit more about both of you because you are working together.
Oh, excellent. Thank you. Yeah, actually, I got to read Samantha's story. She had me take a look at it before she sent it over. It's a really great article about her
Yeah, it's.
upcoming book, Wine and Cheese. And, I've been watching her work on that story for a long time. So the fact that that's coming out and the fact that she kind of got to also write about that process of writing it for the Relatable Voice is really cool.
And it's very inspiring. And Adam, I would like to tell you that our doors are always open for you and Samantha.
Yes, thank you. This has been wonderful.
If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe so you'll be notified when the next one is posted. Please rate this podcast and share it with your friends. Thank you for listening, and remember, relationships don't exist. Relating does. Until next time.
Save big money on everything for your next project at Menards. Spring is here, making it the perfect time for outdoor projects. Suncast storage sheds are an excellent solution for protecting outdoor lawn and gardening tools. They're easy to assemble, and the all-weather construction provides water resistance and UV protection. Save big on Suncast storage sheds. View our selection of Suncast products today in-store and on Menards.com. Save big.